I have entitled this eighth session of our study of the Thessalonian letters, Cloaks and False Colors. And our text is 1 Thessalonians chapter 2, verses 5 to 8. I spent no small amount of time earlier this week trying to come up with a familiar illustration with which to preface this study. But after a while, I realized that this wasn't necessary for two reasons. First, what Paul writes here and how he writes it is so clear and so easily understood that it requires no contemporary illustration. And second, what Paul writes is so common, so rampant, and by that I mean spreading unchecked in our own society, that upon reading this passage, every one of us can supply for ourselves a number of ready examples from life. So instead of wasting time telling a story, let's get right to it. Let's read our passage, 1 Thessalonians chapter 2, verses 5 to 8. For we never came with flattering speech, as you know, nor with a pretext for greed, God is our witness. Nor did we seek glory from men, either from you or from others, even though as apostles of Christ we might have asserted our authority. But we proved to be gentle among you, as a nursing mother tenderly cares for her own children. Having so fond an affection for you, we were well pleased to impart to you not only the gospel of God, but also our own lives, because you had become very dear to us. In this passage, we have the second part of the outline from last week, where Paul first presents what they didn't do, then explains what they did do. Here, in outline form, he says, first, we did not, first use flattering or man-pleasing speech, have a pretext for greed, seek glory from men. But instead, we were as gentle among you as a nursing mother is with her child. We have a true affection for you. You are dear to us, to the extent that we gave you not just the good news of Christ, but our very lives. And let me point out another theme woven into this text. Look at verse 4. He says, we speak not as pleasing men, but God. From verse 5, we never came with flattering speech. From verse 6, nor did we seek glory from men. Ah, here, tucked inside Paul's explanation of what they didn't do, we discover a dark and insidious cause and effect. Now, from one perspective, it might seem, if not laudable, at least not so terrible, that we seek to please others. After all, we tell ourselves, that's just being generous and thoughtful, putting their needs before our own. But when our effort, here's what comes out in this text, but when our effort is to please men, it's from men we seek glory. And when that glory is not forthcoming, let me tell you, our spirit turns bitter and resentful. I've told this story before in past studies. I'm going to tell it again. It is particularly fitting right now. Quite a few years ago, in another place and time, I sat down in my library. I invited this elder from our church, not elder as in a office in the church, but just an older gentleman in the church whose opinion I respected. I invited him to my house, and we sat down in the library, and I spilled out to him my tale of woe about how I was in the church. I was doing this, I was doing that. I was giving so much, I was serving so much, and nobody appreciated it. it really was, in retrospect, quite embarrassing. But that was my state of mind then. I was resentful. I was bitter. Because people were not paying me homage for the service I was giving. And he very gently, firmly, but gently said, "You're not doing it for them. You're doing it for Jesus. You look up and do it for Jesus and let him spread it around to where he's going to, where it needs to be." I've never forgotten what he said to me. In fact, I also remember that in that moment he said, "I don't know where that came from. I don't know where that counsel came from. It didn't come from me. It came from God." But it was absolutely right. When our focus is serving people, giving to people, when that's what we're thinking about, it is from them we expect the applause. It is from them, in Scripture, that word is glory. Glory means to be enlarged. Our ego is stroked. Our ego is enlarged when we receive glory from men. But very often it's not forthcoming, is it? They don't meet our expectations of applause. And that makes us dark. It darkens our spirit, makes us resentful. And that dark spirit gets woven throughout the rest of the body, the rest of the church. Whereas, if we serve Christ, if we do what we do using the gifts, our gifts came from God. They belong to Him as we belong to Him. So when we serve using those gifts, we do them up to Him. We seek our glory from Him, not other men. What glory we want is eternal glory. Not these silly plaudits from our brothers and sisters. We want His permanent glory, His crown on our head. And that will not be neglected. It may not come now. It may not come tomorrow. But it will be there. Jesus spoke of this in His Sermon on the Mount. Look at Matthew 6. Matthew chapter 6, beginning with verse 16. "And whenever you fast," Jesus said, "do not put on a gloomy face as the hypocrites do. For they neglect their appearance in order to be seen fasting by men. Truly I say to you, they have their reward in full." Whatever they're going to get, Jesus says, they've already gotten it. That's it. And if it's not enough for them, too bad. That's all they're going to get. He continues, "But you, when you fast, anoint your head and wash your face." In other words, get cleaned up so that you may not be seen fasting by men, but by your Father who is in secret. And your Father who sees in secret will repay you. That's where your glory will come from, God. If you are deserving of glory from God, you will get it. It was C.S. Lewis who put it so succinctly, so eloquently. He wrote this: "Aim at heaven, and you will get earth thrown in. Aim at earth, and you will get neither." Verse 5 begins, "For we never came with flattering speech, as you know, flattering speech is literally in a word of flattery. It includes the word here is logi, L-O-G-O-I, a variation of logos. The word translated flattering is found nowhere else in the New Testament, but is fairly common in ancient secular literature. Kolakai, it means a fawner, someone who fawns on someone else, flattery. It frequently appears in catalogs of vices, such as Philo has, who lists flattery alongside trickery, deceitfulness, and false speaking. The word is not as innocent as just telling your wife her hair looks nice today. It includes the ideas of ulterior motives, insincerity, deceit. He says they came not with flattering speech, nor with a pretext for greed. The NIV's, "nor did we put on a mask to cover up greed," could be interpreted, "we really were greedy and didn't try to hide it," which of course is not what Paul is saying. The idea is that they never came with a pretext such as covetousness would use. They never came with a pretext such as covetousness would use. Both of these, flattery and a pretext for greed, speak of someone being two-faced, deceitful. Paul did not come to Thessalonica to tickle their ears with sweet talk, distracting them while he picked their pockets. And he says, God is witness here. And to the witness, to the witness stand, he calls for his defense, God himself. Note that for testimony to his conduct earlier, he says, he appeals to the Thessalonians themselves. So he says, for we never came with flattering speech, as you know. Now, they could determine that. They could witness that because he's referring to what they said before them, the way they behaved. But for testimony to his motives, he appeals to God, because the Thessalonians could not know the condition of his heart. So he points to God. Only God could testify to the contents of his heart. God is witness. "Nor did we seek glory from men, either from you or from others." Jesus spoke of this to the Jewish leaders. Turn, please, to John 5. John chapter 5. Beginning with verse 41. "I do not receive glory from men, but I know you, that you do not have the love of God in yourselves. I have come in my Father's name, and you do not receive me. If another shall come in his own name, you will receive him. How can you believe when you receive glory from one another, and you do not seek the glory that is from the one and only God?" Jesus says, "I do not receive glory from men." Now, this can be read a number of ways. First, men do not give me honor, he could be saying. They give instead abuse and scorn. Or the questionable NIV translation, "I do not accept the praise of men." Or, "I do not seek the honor of men." Or, "I do not need the honor of men." But here's what I think is the best way to see this. All of these could be true, but I think the best interpretation is, "I do not receive my glory from men, but from God." That is, Jesus says, "Why should I bother with the pitiful glory man can give me? I'll wait for the real thing from my Father." Now back to Thessalonians. I think Paul is saying much the same thing in verse 6. They were not seeking the glory of men because it means nothing compared to the crown awaiting them from the Heavenly Father. Verse 6 closes, "Even though, as apostles of Christ, we might have asserted our authority." By right of their office as apostles, official ambassadors sent by Christ, they could have demanded, or at least permitted, the Thessalonians to treat them with honor, deference. But this they did not do. Now, let's look at verses 7 and 8. Let's read those. But we prove to be gentle among you, as a nursing mother tenderly cares for her own children. Having so fond an affection for you, we were well pleased to impart to you not only the gospel of God, but also our own lives, because you had become very dear to us. He begins these two verses with, "But we prove to be gentle among you." Literally, this is, "We became gentle in your midst." It's even more intimate than "among you" sounds. In your midst, with you. But I want to emphasize this, "we became gentle." This is indicative of Paul's modus operandi as he describes it to the Corinthians. Let's turn to 1 Corinthians chapter 9. Let's begin with verse 19. "For though I am free from all men, I have made myself a slave to all, that I might win the more." Now jump down to 22. "To the weak I became weak, that I might win the weak. I have become all things to all men, that I may by all means save some. And I do all things for the sake of the gospel, that I may become a fellow partaker of it." Paul is saying in this passage in 1 Corinthians that he becomes whatever he needs to be, or he emphasizes certain aspects of his character or history for different situations. Paul, following the model of Christ, was willing to forego his personal rights and privileges, even if necessary, his native personality, for the sake of those to whom he was ministering. This was not duplicity or a self-serving performance, but a sacrificial act that put the good of others before his own. It's reminiscent of where he wrote, I won't even eat meat if it's going to harm the person that's with me, if it's going to harm the faith of a person, I'll abstain from eating meat if they might be offended by that. Now, contrast to what he says in verse 7 with the darker form of this mentioned in verses 5 and 6. Using flattering speech so as to gain glory from men, that's self-serving. In verses 5 and 6. He says they didn't do that. If they had, it would have been self-serving. Whereas becoming something one typically is not, stepping outside one's normal comfort zone so as to win souls with the gospel, is serving others, and ultimately serving God. An example that comes to mind might be a husband and wife with a mission to Muslims. Well, now, if the woman goes in amongst Muslims and does not cover her head, at least cover her head, she's going to offend them to the point where they won't listen to what they have to say. But if she goes in and at least follows that custom of the woman covering her head, then they might listen to what they have to say. That's the idea. It's not duplicity, and it's certainly not self-serving. It's for the sake of the gospel. It's serving others and ultimately serving God. He says, but we prove to be gentle among you. How? As a nursing mother tenderly cares for her own children. I love the imagery of the word translated tenderly cares. The NIV and ESV are too thin. Thalpo is an old Greek word meaning to keep warm, to cherish with tender love, to foster, to brood. So get the picture? It's a picture of a brooding hen carefully covering her eggs with her own body to keep them warm and safe. That's the picture. Maybe she'd like to get up and stretch her legs, go out for some fresh air, but she remains there, giving of herself for the sake of her young. That's the word picture here. Caring for or taking care of in the ESV is too thin. It means cherishing, tenderly caring for someone, keeping them warm, keeping her chicks warm. That's what Paul and his men, that's how they thought of the Thessalonians. And he continues to express this, having so fond an affection for you. I think the ESV captures it best. Being affectionately desirous of you. Paul expands the imagery of the tender care of a nursing mother by using a rare Greek word, homeromai, to describe how deep and visceral is his affection for the Thessalonians. It's found only here in the New Testament. But we can look to the book of Job for a better understanding of the intensity of Paul's affections. The Septuagint uses this word to translate the word haika in Job 3:21. And there it's translated long for. So turn please to Job chapter 3. Job chapter 3, beginning with verse 20. Why is light given to him who suffers, and life to the bitter of soul? Who long for death, there's our word, who long for death, but there is none, and dig for it more than for hidden treasures, who rejoice greatly and exult when they find the grave. Now, though this is speaking of death, it's certainly a darker situation rather than an affection for brothers and sisters in Christ. This opens a window onto the full depth of Paul's affection for the Thessalonians. Haka probably comes from a word that includes the idea of piercing, related even to carving an image or sculpting something. So getting from that to longing, I take to mean that it is an intensified longing that one feels in the gut. That sharp pain we feel when we're homesick, for example. That almost nauseous feeling of homesickness. That's the longing for. That Paul is expressing here. Paul closes this thought in the rest of verse 8 by describing there the missionaries' expression of this affection. What did they do with it? What did they do with this fond affection? They were well pleased. They found pleasure in imparting to them not only the gospel of God, but also our own lives. They did not just preach the gospel, then move on to their next stop. even after they had left Thessalonica. They gave over to these dear people their very lives, translated souls in King James, or selves in the ESV. The word is psyche. It's spelled P-S-Y-C-H-E. We would pronounce it psyche, but it's psyche, and it means breath, the spirit, but not pneuma, which is just the rational and immortal soul, and not just zoe, meaning mere vitality. You are alive. You are living and breathing. It's more than just their physical lives. It means it's in the depths of their being they cared for them. Souls and selves. In other words, the entirety of their being was given over to these people. Why? Because they had become so dear to them. They were loved. And what a difference this makes. Let me close with this. Believe me when I tell you that over the course of my lifetime, I have met and even worked with plenty of pastors on the flip side of this coin. Men who had no affection for, felt no bond with the people to whom they were supposed to be ministering. Delivering a well-researched, eloquent sermon on Sunday morning does not a pastor make. No. Oh, there were some who, like Paul, loved the flock. Yes. But there have been far too many that did not. So, emerging from our wilderness years, quite some time ago, and coming to the church where we are presently, we recognized immediately that here was a body of believers who were loved by their pastor. It was soon apparent that their pastor loved this flock, a psyche love, a soul love. He was and is loved in return. And this foundation means that the sheep in this fold love each other. And of course, he now retired, this pastoral love and affection has lived on in those who followed, because that's the nature of this flock. And in such a setting, it's much easier for the gospel message to find purchase in the hearts of those who hear it, just as it did in Thessalonica.